This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. The circumcision of boys is an essential part of Judaism and Islam. Circumcision has also become a fairly standard part of secular American medicine. But circumcision for medical and hygienic reasons has become increasingly controversial. My guest, David Gallagher, is the author of the book Circumcision. It's a history from ancient times to the present. He's the president of the California Healthcare Institute, a public policy group of biomedical research companies and universities. In tracing how circumcision became a secular medical procedure, he goes back to the period after the Civil War, when a physician named Louis Sayre claimed he could use circumcision to cure paralysis. Other doctors began trying circumcision when presented with problems they didn't know how to fix. During this period, doctors suspected that the foreskin was the source of problems they didn't understand, and over the next 10 to 20 years, doctors favored circumcision as a precautionary operation. I asked Gallagher what problems doctors thought foreskins might be responsible for.
Everything from mental disorders, dementia, schizophrenia, what we would call schizophrenia now, depression, to cancer, transmission of cancer later to the sex partners of uncircumcised men. There's another thread here which is important.
Gee, I thought you were going to say infection.
Well, sexually transmitted diseases became a big part of the discussion really as early as the 1880s.
Mm-hmm.
And there were a couple of studies, but a very important one done based on the 1880 census that seemed to show that Jews had remarkably lower rates of sexually transmitted diseases and other infectious diseases as well compared to Gentiles. And this was thought by many physicians to be owing to Jews were circumcised and Gentiles mainly weren't.
Mm-hmm.
I was about to mention another thread, and that's has to do with masturbation. The medical profession in the 1870s, 80s, 90s believed that masturbation was not only a bad thing, but had really serious health consequences that could endure through life. And so they declared a war on masturbation that sort of resembles our war on drugs today. And this was widely shared, the opinion that masturbation was harmful, by physicians and lay people alike. And they came to believe that the foreskin encouraged masturbation and that removing of it would make boys and young men less likely to masturbate and to harm themselves.
Well, what are the theories today about the foreskin? Do doctors still believe that it plays a role in increasing infection or the transmission of infection, other diseases of the area, schizophrenia? Does it inspire people to masturbate? What's the theories today?
There isn't a distinct shared opinion within the fields of medicine and surgery about the functions of the foreskin. Only recently have anatomists with some level of sophistication using the tools of modern science actually tried to delve into the structure, the cellular structure of the foreskin, and tried at a biophysiological level to understand what role it might play. It turns out that the kinds of cells, that the kind of tissue that exist in the foreskin are very unusual. They only exist a few other places in the body. One comparison might be made to the eyelid, where you have an organ that both lubricates and protects. There's also a lot of cellular material in the foreskin, which is exquisitely sensitive to touch.
So spell out what the controversy is now in the medical profession about whether circumcisions should be routinely performed on infants.
The advocates of circumcision basically say that it could be likened to a vaccination, that it's relatively safe. There are few long-term complications from the procedure, that it protects men for life from some dread diseases like cancer of the penis, and some less dread but still nagging or potentially harmful diseases like urinary tract infections, and that these benefits are worth the minor pain of circumcision in the neonatal period.
And the argument against?
The argument against is that because some people get cavities, we don't pull everyone's teeth. that the fact that there are some diseases of this tissue don't begin to warrant doing a procedure on all male babies. That if you look at the long-term outcomes of circumcision, that cancer of the penis, for example, is so rare that circumcising 100,000 babies to prevent one or two cases is absurd, both in terms of cost and benefits, in terms of use of medical resources, and even in terms of harms to patients. The opponents of circumcision also say that there is a real loss, that the foreskin, in fact, has a function, that it does enhance sexual experience, that it's part of the way nature made us, and that it's a procedure done without informed consent, that it causes real pain, that the only reason that it's tolerated is because it's done behind closed doors, that parents don't know what really happens to their babies, and that it's actually much closer to female circumcision or genital mutilation than we would like to think.
Done behind closed doors. I mean, I think in the Jewish tradition, it's done at a big ceremony with the whole family watching.
That's right. I was referring to medical circumcision.
Right.
And I think it's important to make a distinction between circumcision that's done for religious reasons, where the health benefit is not the point. So one doesn't get into a discussion of costs and benefits, et cetera, but that the point of the procedure is transcendent, in this case, to mark God's chosen people.
Do you think that the typical moil today performs circumcision in more or less the same way that your doctor would in a hospital after a baby's born?
I don't think there's a lot of difference, but there are a couple. In hospitals, because there's a bias toward technology, there are a whole set of tools like the Gomco clamp, which are used to clamp the penis and make the procedure more regular. Moils tend to simply cut, and they're expert at it and generally perform an excellent surgery. Also, there's a lot of pressure today, partly because of parents and partly because of recommendations within the medical profession coming from things like the American Academy of Pediatrics, to provide anesthesia for neonatal circumcision. And it's certainly advisable for any parent who's having a son circumcised to press the physician to conform to the latest standards with respect to anesthesia. By and large, moils don't use anesthesia.
Circumcision is also a part of Islamic culture. Do you know how it became part of Islamic culture?
Islam looks to Abraham in the same way that the Jews do, as a great patriarch and a source of inspiration and practice. And they take circumcision from Abraham, but also from Muhammad, who, depending on which tradition within Islam you want to look at, was perhaps born circumcised, that's one tradition, or was circumcised at an early age. Sometimes they say the seventh day, not the eighth day, to be too much like Jews. But the tradition that followed Muhammad strongly endorses circumcision. In fact, so strongly that there's never really been any controversy at all within the world of Islam about whether this should be done.
Jesus was circumcised, but that was not a tradition that became a part of Christianity. Why not?
Jesus was circumcised to fulfill the law, but I think a practical consideration during the first generation of Christian evangelism kept circumcision from entering Christianity, and that's simply that it would have been impossible to proselytize and convert Gentiles in any large numbers to Christianity if circumcision had been a requirement. Mature men will not be circumcised. It's too painful. It's too difficult. And so the Apostle Paul, in a brilliant theological stratagem, told the Christian converts that circumcision was no longer necessary because they had been virtually circumcised by sharing in Christ's blood sacrifice. And there's a long theological tradition that sweeps all the way from Paul in those early letters down to today, that tries to define the nature of that vicarious participation in Christ's circumcision. But probably the high tide of it was during the Middle Ages, when theologians attempted in great detail to describe exactly how this happened. The other part, though, that's quite interesting is that even by the time of St. Thomas Aquinas, theologians were saying that the lack of the requirement for circumcision made Christianity a universal religion because it could include women, whereas Judaism could only have included men directly in the covenant because only men could be circumcised.
Now, this might be getting too personal, but were you circumcised?
I'm a post-war baby and a middle-class Southern Californian. And everyone, I think, in my generation was, considering the locker room I grew up in.
Did you have any of your opinions about circumcision changed by the research that you did?
Fairly dramatically. I had begun the book being quite neutral and thinking that many of the activists against circumcision were extremists, that particularly the claim that there's a lot of continuity, historical continuity, or that one should draw a comparison between female genital mutilation, female circumcision, and male circumcision, I thought was an exaggeration, if not absurd. The further I got into the project, the more that I felt that there were more comparisons than I was even comfortable with, and I became increasingly skeptical of the medical claims that have been made over the years, and ended up writing, as I have, that there is in fact no persuasive medical basis for doing this routinely. And most younger doctors that I talk to today believe that it's simply an expression of culture, that there's not any convincing medical reason to do it. So I think the strong likelihood is that some years from now we'll continue to see an erosion in the practice, and that the generation of doctors coming out of medical school today will not see this in the same light that their fathers did.
Well, David Gallagher, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
David Gallagher is the author of Circumcision. This is Fresh Air.